From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk from March 4th, 2022. Your Milwaukee Bucks host the Phoenix Suns, the team with the best record in the NBA, this Sunday afternoon at the Forum. And today is National Employee Appreciation Day. We're celebrating here by chipping in and buying our own cake. I just made up that last part. Let me take you to the late 70s when Skylab was falling from orbit and protesters were lining their hats with tinfoil. Well, today, protesters in New Zealand are again lining their hats with tinfoil, but this time for protection against radiation beaming back to Earth from a government satellite. This news is brought to you by Reynolds Wrap. The Pennsylvania Freedom Truck Convoy didn't materialize the way the organizers had planned. Only one truck showed up, and it had two flat tires. To paraphrase the poet Robert Burns, oh, the best laid plans of mice and truckers. Speaking of trucks, a tractor trailer fully loaded with cheese caught fire on the interstate in Kansas. All right, fondue for everybody. A husband and wife traveled to Japan, but they're probably not coming back together. It's a 12-hour flight, and the husband took an upgrade to first class and left his wife in economy. Oh, and it gets better. He then mocked her with details of the comfortable large seats and free drinks. I have a feeling that upgrade is going to cost him like half of the community property. Because he invaded Ukraine, the World Taekwondo Association revoked Vladimir Putin's honorary black belt. Well, I bet he won't do that again. And finally, our goofy headline of the week comes from Bellevue, Washington. Stabbing disrupts anger management class. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Mike Helzel, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Well, a little disappointing week we had, folks. NASDAQ shed 2.8%, losing 381 points, closed at 13,313. The broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500, lost 1.3%, shedding 56 points to close at 4,329. Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up 444 points this week, losing 1.3%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 33,615. Year to date, Dow's down 7.2%. Broader markets down 8.9%. Tech heavy NASDAQ down 14%. You know, Kyle, when you look at the week, I think it's important to focus on, in my opinion, what's really driving the markets these days, and it's interest rates. The war in Ukraine, of course, is impacting interest rates. We had good news on Wednesday, as you read, that Jerome Powell, the head of the Fed, said he's going to raise rates a quarter point week after next. Wednesday stocks took off up 596 points. Only day that we had a big advance this week. Pretty volatile. But I think it's important to set the stage here. You know, back in November, the Fed wasn't planning on raising rates. They thought inflation would come down by itself. Early in January, as you're well aware, the Fed released their minutes and said, oh, we're going to raise rates probably four times. Futures market in Chicago thinks it's probably going to be five rate increases. So in January and part of February, we went through, in my opinion, just a garden variety correction. It's important for investors to remember that when interest rates go up, you have to discount future cash flow by higher rate, which results in a lower present value. So stocks have to reprice themselves. And we see that when rates go up. Hurts tech stocks a little bit more than the value stocks because they have higher cash flow. And then you throw the war into the mix. We could go Thursday, of course, when the Russians invaded Ukraine. You know, and everything that I can figure out tells me that oil is going to keep going up in price. Had a pretty good increase, then a decrease this week. And then it's going to cause upward pressures on commodities prices. Russia, as we all know, is a large exporter of wheat. palladium, nickel, among others. So when I look at the markets here, you know, I think it's important also to remember that you don't normally see bear markets as the result of a war. Pretty uncommon. Not that it can't happen, but it usually doesn't. And the reason, of course, is that it is truly all about interest rates and earnings. Earnings look pretty good. FactSet still thinks 8.6% increase in earnings for the year. Economy's in pretty good shape. Kyle, what's your take on the week?
Yeah, you know, I think it's so interesting. Barron's quoted some research by Ned Davis this week talking about how wars actually tend not to be all that big of a detractor from stock market performance. I think the reality, of course, is that at least early on, there's a lot of uncertainty. And as that uncertainty starts to resolve, you know, you see some of the pressure that stocks are under start to taper off. That isn't to say that, you know, there aren't some other reasons why stocks were selling off. Certainly, I think you point out some of the inflationary pressures as a meaningful reason earlier in the year why stocks, you know, had as rough of a go as they had. You know, I think you add in the uncertainty of this war right now, and, you know, there's every reason to believe that we continue to see some pressure short term, but longer term, you know, markets get back to fundamentals, markets get back to earnings and interest rates. The earnings forecast has not come down at all so far. And if anything, the outlook for rates has slowed a bit now as uncertainty about global economic growth has crept its way in. And so you saw the rate on the 10-year move 25 basis points lower this week, similar move on the five-year part of the yield curve with the five-year treasury moving down 25 basis points as well. And so I think, you know, a strong reminder for investors this week, just how important it is to maintain a fairly high quality intermediate position in bonds. That position had been a fairly big detractor, you know, up until this week. And all of a sudden you see interest rates, you know, fall pretty substantially as Jay Powell, I think, rightfully points out that maybe the path forward for rates is a little more tempered. It's a little more maybe a little less direct than going from, you know, nothing overnight rate to, you know, a 2 or 2.25% overnight rate. Instead, you know, I think we're going to be a little more sensitive to, you know, what the economic impact is. And of course, the one clear hurdle that we need to overcome right now is inflation. And I'm not sure that the Fed's tools are immediately going to, you know, put an end to those challenges. You know, as you rightfully point out, the challenges are not necessarily demand driven. They're very much supply driven right now with you know, decreases in, you know, oil production potentially coming out of Russia. Not a lot of buyers for Russian oil these days, not a lot of buyers for Russian wheat, Russian palladium. And so, you know, I think as you look at commodity price spikes, you look at some of the issues, I think one of the things that's given interest rates cover this week, one of the things that's made bonds such a strong position is that, you know, I think the Fed has been clear that they maybe can be a little bit slower in their action. Certainly still trying to get interest rates back to a more normal or more typical place. But, you know, I think the overall concerns that we had earlier in the year have maybe slowed a bit there.
Joel, let's bring you into the program here. Headline news, of course. Labor Department reported that 678,000 new jobs were created last month. That's a pretty big number.
It is, Bob. It's so, I mean, consider that we lost, what, 22 million jobs when we first went into recession, when the pandemic started 2 years ago. We've recovered almost 20 million of those jobs. So we're about 2.1 million behind. I mean, you know, think about that. That's adding 10 million jobs a year the last couple of years. Of course, that's, again, you know, we're still behind where we were, and we're still behind where we would have been if we hadn't had that setback to begin with. But yeah, it's going pretty well. A lot of the numbers in that Labor Department report, you know, show how strong the economy is, that we're hiring back a lot. One job category we keep looking at is leisure and hospitality, which accounts for about one in every 10 jobs of our economy. And they accounted for 26% of the jobs, of those 678,000 that you just talked about that we got in February. They also account for about 71% of those 2.1 million jobs that we're still missing. So that's something that we hope will come, you know, with spring, with warmer weather, with drops in mask requirements and people feeling that they can, you know, go out and businesses seeing that they can open again amid the pandemic.
Joel, as you know, these numbers tend to be fairly volatile month to month, but I was impressed that we had flat wage growth in the report that was released this morning.
That's right. They look at the average hourly wages for non-farm employees, and it was 5.1% wage increase from a year ago, which is, you know, typically on the high side, but that's below where it was in January. In January, it was 5.4, 5.5% year-to-year wage growth. So, and again, I mean, we're looking at inflation, you know, depending upon which measure you use, 6.1%, 7.5%. So those wages aren't keeping up with inflation.
Dave, what's your take on current events? What are you telling clients these days?
Well, clients, I think, are starting to get to the point this year trying to find some good news somewhere. You know, it's been a pretty rough start to the year, obviously. And you know, we started out in the midst of a really strong pandemic situation in the first part of the year, followed with some shocking inflation numbers, and then, of course, the war in Ukraine. And so I think if you're looking for a little bit of a bright spot that we're not hearing about much in the news these days is how healthy the American consumer still is after everything that's happened. We look at savings rates at very high levels. We're looking at you know, debt service ratios, you know, how much a person has to take from their take-home pay and put towards debt payments is low as it's been in many, many years. So we're looking at full employment. And I think we're, you know, going into a summer here where with COVID rescinding, we could be looking at a very, very healthy economy and lots of economic activity, which, you know, obviously consumers have to put up with some higher prices. And at some point, I suppose there's a threshold for that, right? At what point in time do consumers capitulate? But right now, it looks like people are chomping at the bit to start enjoying services again, nights out, flights to warmer weather, to, you know, hotel stays, and whether it be concerts or anything else on the service side of things, we're starting to see some fantastic activity there. So
I think that's I think that's a good point that you make about the pent-up demand, because a lot of the indicators that we look at, although we see that inflation, you know, on a year-to-year basis is high, that prices are rising fast from where they were a year ago, we're not seeing a whole lot of pullback yet. We are seeing, you know, consumer spending. We're seeing, you know, retail spending. We're seeing a lot of the signs that there is that pent-up demand.
Dave, I find it real curious that in poll after poll, so many Americans think the economy is in really tough shape. Yet if you ask individual consumers how are they doing, they'll tell you, hey, I'm doing pretty good. And you look at the underlying numbers, GDP is going to be somewhere between 3.5% and 4% this year in the U.S. That's a huge number. We averaged barely 2% GDP growth, as you know, in the last 12 years. So it's interesting how, you know, my interpretation of the tea leaves show an economy that's in pretty good shape here for all those reasons that you articulated. But the polls, I think they're skewed by partisan politics in part. But, you know, the surveys are showing consistently that Americans don't think the economy is in that good a shape.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, just like inflation doesn't just show up on your doorstep one day when you wake up in the morning, it also doesn't just disappear overnight. And I'm not so sure we have to have it disappear. I think that one thing that would help Americans and consumers would be to at least start to see a plateau here. And you're pointing out the fact that you saw some of the labor wage increase numbers kind of flattening a little bit might be some good news. And if we can get a couple of readings here in the coming months where at least we see a cresting of the inflation numbers and maybe some slight decreases, I think that would provide some more confidence to the American consumer that, okay, you know, maybe this isn't 1973 all over again, right?
Mike, I've been managing money for a long time, as you know, and I see corrections like this as buying opportunities. I've been particularly attracted to some of the tech stocks, growth stocks in general, that are down 13, 14, 15% or more. What are you telling clients right now when they ask you about buying?
I'm telling them that depending on the investor, yeah, it can be a good buying opportunity, right? Like if you're a little bit older, maybe you don't want to get too aggressive into tech stocks, even though they're down a little bit. Maybe you want to ride this out some. But some of my, you know, younger clients, and younger is a relative term. So,
depends, thank you. You know,
I mean, 30, 40, 50, 60, if you haven't retired yet and you have a little bit of time before you're done working, yeah, this could be a good opportunity because tech stocks have taken a hit, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're bad companies, that they'll rebound, right? I mean, a lot of what I'm telling clients is, because I'm sure a lot of us are here, clients are panicking a little bit, but I'm telling them to stay committed to their long-term goals and not to be really disoriented by kind of moments of crisis, right? Markets are resilient and they have powered through before. I mean, a recent example is, again, Russia invaded Crimea in 2014. And 3 months after that big hit, the market was up, I believe like 4 or 5%. A year after that, it was up over 10. So if you stay the course and then pick your spots in terms of buying opportunities, you don't have to abandon like all hope or all your goals for moving forward.
Well, let's bring you back on the show. We had other numbers this week that are worth talking about. Productivity numbers, factory orders, construction spending, all pretty encouraging.
Yeah, Bob, it all gets back to what you were talking about, how strong the economy is overall. You know, not adjusted for inflation, factory orders and construction spending are at all-time highs. Adjusted for inflation, the biggest measure of our economy is, you know, GDP. And that's, you know, the fourth quarter is the last number we have for that. And that was, what, $19.8 trillion. It's never been that big before. And as far as productivity is concerned, think of this. I mean, those numbers are telling us that, I mean, if I could tell you that you could work more, that you could have a greater output and do it in less time, that would be a good thing, right? Well, that's what we're seeing. So, you know, since before the pandemic started, we've added like 4.1% to our economic output in the U.S., and the number of hours worked has gone down 0.4%. So, you know, that's something that we look at on a quarterly basis from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it's a good sign. It says that we're figuring out how to do more with less, and being able to sustain that over time, you know, is what helps our world go round.
Kyle, I've been spending an enormous amount of time this last month talking about inflation with clients. I think it's so important to distinguish between the wage price spirals that we suffered through in the 70s, a very, very different type of inflation than what we're dealing with now. As you're well aware, month over month, inflation peaked last October. Granted, it may come up again now that we saw oil go up to $107 a barrel today. But you know, where I'm going with this is, it's counterintuitive to think that we're just not going to solve the supply chain bottlenecks in the next year or so. And that's the underpinning to the argument that, and of course, inflation is going to come down. You know, we know, give or take, 40% of the increase in inflation came from government stimulus. I think it'd be fair to suggest that politicians in private would say, yeah, maybe we stimulated a little too much. Pretty accurate to say that in hindsight. At the time, they didn't know the recovery would come so quick. But 40% of the inflation came from stimulus spending. That's mostly in the rearview mirror. 60% of the inflation is supply chain bottlenecks, and they're slowly being unwound as companies figure out more dependable supply chains. So it's just a matter of time, in my opinion, that they resolve many of the supply chain difficulties and the inflation numbers come way down.
I think one of my favorite talking points in that regard is just to look at the amount of spending that's planned for semiconductor manufacturing here in the U.S. And President Biden talked about it in the State of the Union this week. But, you know, even looking back to the middle of last year, you have a significant on the order of billions of dollars planned for spending to build what was a good that went into so many things that we use, cars, cell phones, computers, right? Every one of those things has any number of semiconductors in it. And so as you look at kind of the long-term outlook for a key or core component for so many of those things, not only now have we bolstered this supply, but we've also done it in a far more sustainable manner because we've brought that supply chain back here to the U.S. And so I think, you know, there is this revolution we've been talking about now since the pandemic began, and even before that, about bringing you know, some manufacturing back here to the U.S. Obviously, there are cost constraints to that, doing it here in the U.S. relative to, you know, any number of other lower labor cost places. But I think a number of businesses have learned their lesson that they need a little more control over those supply chains. Maybe they need to keep a little more supply on hand as well. And so, you know, I think we have in so many ways, you know, as Joel mentioned, the productivity numbers earlier, we have found ways to be more productive as part of this pandemic. We've also relearned some lessons or maybe re-educated ourselves a bit on some things that we learned, you know, back in the 80s and 90s with, you know, on-time delivery or Kanban or any of the number of, you know, supply chain terms that are out there to kind of talk about, you know, running operations lean. Well, that's great until you're in the middle of a pandemic. And I think, you know, we have learned a number of lessons on a, you know, productivity side, on a, you know, physical goods side. The other piece of this, and it's one that I've suggested, I think, is the more critical component, is, you know, another piece that Joel mentioned earlier, the hospitality industry. As we continue to feel more confident about getting back out and traveling and doing things that we haven't done in a while, you see hotel occupancies go back up, you see cruise ships starting to get full again, you see theme parks and resorts starting to get full again, and all of a sudden the things people are spending money on can be a little more easily procured than creating another vehicle, right? It's a lot easier to fill another empty hotel room than it is to build out another you know, car or SUV and find another customer for it. And so I think, you know, a transition back to a more service-based economy, which really is how the U.S. has been structured for the better part of a couple of decades now. I think a transition back towards services and away from many of the goods that we had been spending a lot of money on during the pandemic will also help to alleviate a lot of those problems.
Thank you for that comment. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.